podcast uses profanity and topics may be disturbing for some listeners. Listen at your own risk. Welcome back to Hell on Heels Podcast. I'm Bryce.
I'm Amanda.
And hello. How are you? Welcome back, everyone.
I think I'm good.
You think?
Think. How was this week? Oh, this week was stupid. Okay. Yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
How are you?
Listen, I have a bone to pick. Oh, several
with
bones.
Me?
No.
Okay, cool.
With my father.
Oh, good. Let's shit talk.
So,
oh, she has
a
sticky note, guys. She has a post-it.
I do have a post-it.
This is serious.
First of all, from the last episode that was released, my dad said the reason you have two buttholes now is so that there's not a vacuum effect, so you can have a better time pulling your head out of your ass.
No, it's still going to be pretty difficult.
He just said there's no more vacuum effect on it. Like, you're not going to be stuck in there as much, but, you know, you're still stuck.
I thought it was a bug hit my mouth. Oh, my God, gross. That was disgusting. There's a moth in here. I thought it was the second hole was so I could breathe while my head was there, and then I just don't have to remove it at all.
No, no. He says it so that it's to help ease your head out of your ass.
I don't think he's right.
I don't know.
He's not a medical professional, so.
He's not. Okay. But then I have more bones to pick with him.
Okay.
Bones that I've already picked with him, but we're going to revisit this now because I'm bitter.
Let's rehash.
So Monday. Talked to my dad for a little bit in the morning. I can't remember about what. And blah, blah, blah. At around 3:00 in the afternoon, I called him again. And I didn't get an answer. Now, I let this slide because he's at work. Fine.
Typically, a good person.
Yeah. Typically, if he doesn't answer his phone while he's working, I get a text that says, I'll call you back in a bit. I didn't get that text. So I was like, huh. Okay, weird. So anyways, I finished my day and it was like 6:00 now. So I call him again. Do you think he responds? No, I get zero response from him. No answer, not even a text.
Your own father ghosted you?
He attempted to. So I'm over here worried about his well-being, okay? So I end up at some point between the second call and the third call I make to him, I call my mother. And she's like, oh, he's at football practice right now. Okay, that doesn't excuse the 3-hour gap between when I called him at 3 and when I called him at 6.
Yeah, if he's at football practice right now, surely it's not that long of a practice.
So, well, that's what I thought. So I call him at 7:30. No answer. I don't get a text. I don't get a damn thing from him. Now, I know at this point he's been at football practice, okay? I'm now worried because those little girls, if he has fallen and can't get up, they're not helping. They're not helping him. They're opting not to help him.
Oh, he makes them run laps.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not getting help from them.
So I don't get a response from him at all. So I'm worried. The next morning, I get a text from him and it says, I know nothing of Canadian laws and I refuse to email you guys.
What?
From the Betty Osborne case that you covered. We told him to give us in-depth details on Canadian laws from the 60s, 70s. And then we told him he had to email us and he wasn't allowed to text me.
Okay, well, right off the bat, he failed.
Right, he fails. First of all, he's already in trouble from the day before because I hadn't heard from him.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, he texts me. And I respond by saying, I called you 3 times last night. We're not on speaking terms right now. His excuse? I was coaching. All night long? All night? And he goes, yes, until now, I was coaching. You're full of crap, Dad. And I responded, bull doo-doo. So mad. And he calls me a crybaby.
Okay, wait. So even if he was busy, what is his excuse for the very first text message him sending you being disobedience?
It's because we told him what to do and he doesn't want to be told what to do.
I asked for knowledge and enlightenment. I apologize for expecting that from your father.
I'm so sorry.
I've learned my lesson.
Clearly doesn't listen, okay? After he called me a crybaby, my first response was, your first youngest child called 3 times, didn't even get a text back to say you were busy. I was worried you were stranded somewhere because your knees gave out. We need to get you life alert.
First youngest child, I'm dead, first of all.
I am the first youngest child, because Mill's now the youngest child, but I'm the first youngest child. I was youngest for 19 years, for 18 and a half years, okay? I am the first youngest child.
That's great. I'm just saying, I appreciate that.
So, I ended up calling him later, and I'm like, Dad, do you understand? If you had fallen on that field, no one was helping you up. I didn't know if you were left in that field all night long. I was worried sick about you. And then followed up by me saying, so the nursing home got you home okay? And he said, yeah, they got me home okay. So we're on better speaking terms now. But I also, I think, in, I can't remember if this was before or after, I had a dream that got me in trouble.
What?
I've had several dreams, okay?
Is it the pregnancy dreams?
I think so. I assume pregnancy. That's what it is.
Oh, they're wild.
So, before I tell you about the dream, though, I want to let you know that that's why me and my dad, I have a bone to pick with him.
Okay.
As his first youngest child, I expect at least a text back.
I still feel that's fair.
I think that's fair.
As any fair. Child, honestly.
You know what? No, no. They're fine. My older brother and sister, they don't need a text back. Text me back, Dad.
But I'm saying, like, if he's not going to call you back, the least he can do to a child is text them back. As his first youngest child, you should get both.
I should. I should get a text and a call back. Yes. So, very bitter about that. Dad, I just want to remind you that at this point, I've got four words for you. State-funded nursing home.
Oh, you done messed up.
Let's remember that, Dad, okay? Let's remember.
You see what we do as a hobby. It's not going to be good.
State-funded nursing home, okay?
Hope your pension's worth it.
So... anyways, this dream that then got me in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my heck. I don't know. I don't know what's happening with my dreams right now, okay?
It's pregnancy, I'm telling you.
I know it has to be. So, in this dream, it's me, my older sister, and my mom. Where my dad, brother, Mill, anyone else is, I don't know. But it's the three of us. It's the girls, right? Except for Mill. Okay. Sorry, Mill. And... you know, like, the perspective of when you're, like, really young of a place versus, like, when you're older, the perspective's very different?
Yes.
So, this was in the perspective of, like, my, I don't know, six-year-old mind of what my mom's old job used to be before, you know, she started being a stay-at-home mom, which okay. is a job in of itself. But I have that perspective, right? So, in this dream, me, my mom, and my older sister, we are at where my mom used to work. And on where, or like where she used to work, this isn't on planet Earth, it's on a different planet, okay?
Why are all of your dreams from outer space?
Another dream was from outer space.
The one where y'all were in the spaceship. And y'all were trying to get back to your mom?
Oh, did I already tell you this one? That's this one. I told you via Snapchat, though.
Did you?
I told you via Snapchat. Oh.
What dream? What are you talking about? You haven't told me about any dream.
So now I'm just telling our listeners, okay? Anyways, so we're outer space on a different planet. And somehow, some way, me and my sister convinced my mom to quit. Why? I don't know. We just convinced her to quit. And we get on this janky rocket ship. Now, when I say janky, like, it's... imagine, like, a trailer, like a camping trailer, but, like, an older version, and the door doesn't close all the way. So, definitely a little janky for our standards.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A smidge.
Now, we get in. My mom, she's doing like 20-point harness. She's buckled in. Me and my sister, off to the side playing games. We're not buckled in, okay? Our safety doesn't matter. And we, basically, in this dream, it's like, you can't go from world to world directly. You have to go from world to outer space to world. Like, you have to, on your pre-programmed stuff, you have to go from the world you're on, choose to go to outer space, and then while in outer space, you can choose the next world you're going to.
That sounds highly inefficient, but okay.
That's just what it makes you do, okay? And so, we go to a couple worlds, and then we're up, we're in outer space, and something's happening. Me and my sister are like bickering or playing, or I don't know what we're doing, but my mom ends up out of her 20-point harness here, okay? And me and my sister, with whatever we were doing, pressed a button. And that sent my mom, remember that that door I said that didn't close all the way? Yeah, it didn't close all the way. That sent my mom hurtling out of the spaceship. And me and my sister, she was to a world. And Dumb and Dumber, me and my sister here, are like, oh, we have to find mom. And so instead of going back, like, we both had the knowledge she was okay, but she was basically waiting where we just were. So, like, if we had just gone backwards a step, we would have found her and been like, so sorry, ground us later, we found you, whoopsie daisies.
Yeah, everything's like, good now.
So none of us were in a harness, and she's the only one that went flying out. So, I don't know why. Anyways, so instead of us backtracking, me and my sister go forward. Like, we're hopping to planets we haven't been to.
Uh-huh.
Expecting to find her, I guess. I don't know.
Maybe she hitched a ride.
I can just tell you right now, she is just floating in space with her arms crossed. And if she could be tapping her toes on something, she would be. She'd be pissed. So, I woke up. And the first thing I thought was, you dumbasses, just go backwards. Like, we had that knowledge. Like, I know we had that knowledge to go backwards. So I tell my mom and my dad about it, and I tell my sister about it. And my sister, she's like, listen. Well, first of all, I told my dad, and he's like, can you imagine how pissed mom would be? I was like, yeah, I already told her about the dream. She's already upset with us. And then I called my sister and told her about it later in the day. And my sister's like, you know, the reason that we didn't go backwards is because we knew she'd be mad. We had to create distance.
That is an older sister thing, if I've ever heard it.
And I'm like, listen, I think maybe we just texted dad and said, this is where she's at. We're out. We're hiding. But during the conversation with my sister goes, do you know why dad's mad at me? I don't know. Probably the dream. Like, let's be honest. I told him about this dream. But I was like, I said that as a joke. Because I guess my dad texted her and said something about how he was upset with her. So I hang up. She calls my dad. I call my mom. No, it was about the dream.
Oh my God. Why?
We were in a lot of trouble, apparently. And my dad was upset that we just left my mom floating in outer space. The following day, though, I'm talking to my mom and dad, and my dad's upset with me and older brother and sister. He's upset with all of us except for my mom. He had a dream that there was something attacking him. We're in like a stairwell, and the only one trying to save him was my mom. Right? And then we kept talking, and he ends up hanging up on us, or on me, I should say. So when I called back, I said, maybe this is why none of us went to go to your aid, Dad. Like, none of us were going to protect you because of this crap.
Oh.
To remember this for future reference.
You know what? His dream is actually just foreshadowing.
Uh-huh.
Because it's really just a dream of him being put in the state-funded nursing home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
I firmly believe.
It is probably a nurse with a giant needle coming at him. My dad hates needles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So. Well, there we go, Dad. We figured it out. That's why no one was there to protect you. We put you there.
Yeah. That's why you did this to yourself.
Mom, however, she's in a fancy schmancy nursing home.
And she's trying to get him to come there with her.
Actually, Mom's probably still at home because we like her and we'll care for her. Dad, on the other hand, unless you fix your ways and start texting me or calling me back, state-funded nursing home.
There you go. You heard it here first. You know what you have to do to fix this situation.
There you have it.
I don't know what there you're waiting for.
He's waiting for a miracle.
No, I think you are.
I think he's waiting for Mill. He's like, she'll be the one to protect me and take care of me. Yeah, good luck with that, Dad.
I feel like she'll be the one locking the door and laughing at him through the window as y'all pull off from the state-funded nursing
home. Probably. Yeah, she's going to be like, bye. Got my own things to do, Dad. Just saying. Anyway, so that's my story. That's the bone I had to pick with my dad. I was very upset with him. Still very upset with him. Doesn't matter that I got in trouble for telling him about that dream. Does not matter. What matters is that Dad, start calling me back or texting me that you're busy. Even if you say you're busy for the rest of the night, I don't care. I gotta make sure you're alive. Especially after you told me that you already fell during one of these football practices, I have concerns for you.
How many people laughed at him?
Probably all of the little girls.
Oops. Or like that. Okay. That poor man. That's rough.
He claims that he tripped over a bag behind him, but I don't know.
A bag or his hip gave out?
He's going to stick to his story that it was a bag. It was probably a hip or a knee. I don't know. Mill, you were there. Let us know. Anyways, that is my story.
I enjoyed your stories. Thank you.
You're welcome. I hope you enjoy those, because we're going to have to start doing like a dream moment when I have vivid dreams to share. Because I also got Cody in trouble too from a different dream. But let me think. Is there anything else? I don't think there's anything else.
I don't know. It's been a while since we recorded, because we skipped last weekend. I know, yeah. I was busy because we did something literally like every day, and I'm not used to that. I'm a couch potato.
I think I started on a true crime, not a paranormal. My bad. Oops. I have paranormal for this episode. My bad.
But at least you're ahead for the next episode.
Not really, because I've got to finish it still. Because I started on the true crime. I'm basically done. I really am. I probably can add to it, but then I realized I've got to switch gears and do paranormal, and I've only got like 2 hours to do this. Oh, crap.
Oops. Oh, I've done that.
My bad.
Pretty sure I've done that.
Yeah, well, no, yours was we actually jumped on, and you're like, wait just a second. At least I realized an hour before. Uh-huh. Oop. No, I just had, partly, okay, first of all, Thursday was my fault that we didn't record, though, because I had a lot going on that day, okay? I had customers calling, wanting meetings after hours, and then I had one that I already agreed to, one that I was forced into. It was just a long day, okay?
Hey, I'm fine with it.
I mean, it's whatever. It's not my problem. I guess it was my problem. It's not my problem anymore. That's because that day's passed. Yeah. Yeah, I think other than that, that's all the stories I have.
I don't think I got anything really.
I'm over here just trying to think. Yeah, I think I've been boring. Guys, listen, I'm fat and pregnant. I can't do any fun things other than pick on my dad, okay?
I feel like that's a very healthy way to pass the time.
I think that's fine. Anyways, well, you want to talk about social media? Socials?
I do. I want you to talk about it, though.
Is it because you feel like you can't do it?
Not as good as you will.
Okay, well, let's just talk about Facebook. We got that. We've got Instagram, that one as well, Hell on Heels Podcast. We also have X, formerly Twitter, Hell on Heels Pod, because they cut me off. We have our Linktree up and going, so if you want or need a link to any of the things, that includes any of the Spotify links, Apple, anything like that to get to our podcast, that is up and going. We have our Discord up and going. We also have Patreon and our email. Our email, you can email us if you have ideas, suggestions, words of encouragement, whatever you want. And then remember, if you guys enjoy listening to our bullshit and picking on our mom, my dad, go ahead and tell your friends, family, frenemies to listen to us as well. And now I'm done.
Okay. Well, do you want to hear a story since you're done?
You already told me it's kind of convoluted, so no, but yeah, I guess so.
Oh, well. I trimmed a lot of fat. Like, I put this story on a diet when you were like, hey, I did the wrong story. I was like, cool. Let me redo this a little bit.
Okay.
So this case is messy. That's what I was telling Bryce beforehand. There's tons of information online. I'm kind of apprehensive to call it misinformation because we don't know. There's a lot of, well, this person of interest said this, this other person of interest dad came out and said that he was at home texting him all night from his home. There's speculation that the victim died of a drug overdose because police found a small amount of cocaine in her room. I feel like a small amount of cocaine, drug overdose, that's a little bit of a people can do drugs and not. Boy, this is not going well. Basically, people can do drugs responsibly, okay? Like, say what you want, but a tiny... Well, you see what I'm trying to say here?
She's and not trying to say well? People can do drugs and not die.
Yes. Like, just...
Because I don't know that doing drugs responsibly is what you're looking at. I think she's trying to say people often will consume drugs of various sorts and not die.
Yes, thank you. That's way better.
In various quantities as well.
Yes.
Okay.
So my timeline that I got came from court documents. I feel like this was the most legally indisputable.
Okay.
So this is the disappearance of Lauren Spearer. Lauren Spearer was born January 17th, 1991. She was the younger of two daughters. She was the second youngest daughter of Charlene and Robert Spearer. She grew up in Scarsdale, New York. She graduated from Edgemont High School in 2009. And while she was in high school, she played soccer and lacrosse. In 2011, which is when our story takes place, Lauren was a 20-year-old sophomore at Indiana University. This university is in Bloomington, Indiana, and she was majoring there in textile merchandising. So she wanted to go into fashion. She was active in the Jewish community on campus, and she even spent the prior spring break in Israel planting trees for the Jewish National Fund. And she worked with Habitat for Humanity in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina.
Okay.
She was described as athletic, always smiling, happy. She had a big heart. Like, she sounds like a really good person.
Oh, I was going to say, she's already doing, like, volunteering for Habitat for Humanity. And the first one in Israel, you said Israel, right?
Yeah, planting trees.
Planting trees, yeah.
So yeah, she's super she sounds super selfless in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
She was about 4'11", 95 pounds, so she was tiny.
Yeah.
She had blonde hair, blue eyes, and she had a heart condition. And she had a condition called long QT syndrome. I had no idea what that is, so I went straight to Google. And Google
as
said that
we
it's,
do.
I mean, it's 2024. Come straight to Google.
We don't even hesitate on that. We're like, Google what? No. Yep.
It's on the home screen on my phone. Always right there.
That's what you forgot was your broken phone. Sorry.
Oh my God. Yes, I did.
I'll remind you tomorrow.
Okay, thank you. Ugh, anyway. So, long QT syndrome. Google described it as a heart rhythm disorder that can potentially cause fast, chaotic heartbeats. It said that it can cause dizziness and fainting with no warning. And at its worst, it can cause heart palpitations and even cardiac arrest.
Okay, that sounds pretty serious.
Yeah. Lauren had a group of friends that she hung out with at college, and she had met some of them years earlier at a summer camp called Camp Tawanda in Honesdale, Pennsylvania. One of the people she met here was her boyfriend of 2 to 3 years, sources varied on that, named Jesse Wolf. And the night of June 2nd, 2011, he had allegedly been texting Lauren, but they weren't together. And eventually she told him she was going to bed. From what he says, he was home that night. Well, from what he and his father says, he was home that night. He watched a basketball game and then he went to sleep. Now, it was unclear what time she told him she was going to bed. But what was very clear was surveillance video of her leaving her home at Smallwood Apartments at 12:30 a.m. Yeah, the face you just made, like, I used to be able to do that. That's, I am passed out. I'm not leaving this house at 12:30 in the morning.
I take my Unisom 8:15, 8:30, so I'm asleep by 9. 9:30 exactly. At the latest. Like, midnight? Oh, no, thank you.
If I'm awake at midnight, it's because a child's screaming. Absolutely not. No. the past two or three New Year's in a row, I took a nap on the couch and James woke me up at New Year's.
We don't even do anything for New Year's anymore. We sleep. In the morning, we say Happy New Year. Good night. Yeah, good morning, like, I guess.
I wouldn't if James wouldn't be awake to wake me up. But
Tell him to knock that off, because that's not very nice.
I sleep on the couch, so I don't really mind. But
I do. I want uninterrupted sleep. I'm trying to get as much as I can, because right now my bladder gives out on me between 12 midnight and 1. So I have to get those couple hours of sleep in before I have to go to the bathroom.
Okay. Yeah, you have a valid reason. Matter of fact, you should have your own room. No, you should have your own house to go be pregnant in by yourself. Just you and your animals.
Well, can I choose which ones are there for the day? Because right now all of them are bugging me.
Yeah, obviously. It's your house.
My house, my rules.
Exactly. So she's not boring. She's young, and she's seen leaving her apartment at 12:30 a.m. She's wearing black leggings and a white t-shirt, and she seems happy. Seems like she's in a good mood. She's ready to go out and have a good time. And I didn't put that picture of her on here, but I will add that.
Okay.
So, now she's not said to be alone that night. She was said to have left her apartment building with a friend that lives in the Smallwood as well. And his name, why didn't I put it in here? Sorry, his name is David Roan. And some sources said he was a neighbor. Some said he lived in the building. I don't think he lived right next to her. I think they knew each other, but maybe they weren't apartments right next door.
Mm-hmm.
But they made their way to Jason Rosenbaum's apartment for a party he was having. And also there that night was Corey Rossman, Jason's neighbor. So at some point during this party, Lauren and Corey leave and go to Corey's apartment in the same, they had townhouses. So in the same complex, she goes to his apartment.
So Corey's, wait, isn't she dating this Jesse Wolf?
Yes.
So I guess my question is, why didn't she say, like, Jesse, come to this party with me?
I don't know. That is unclear. I couldn't find out if he knew about it. He knew she was hanging out with friends, but
other maybe it was like stated, a last minute, like, hey, there's this party, let's go. And she thought he was already asleep.
And I could see that. I mean, they're 20 years old in college, so I could definitely see her, like, I don't know, winding down for the night, and a friend's like, hey, I'm having this rager, why don't you come party? And she's like, yeah, why not? I'm young, I'm in college. What the hell?
Because it's midnight, and you want me to go to a party after 8 o'clock at night? No.
I mean, these are young people we're talking about, though.
Are you calling me old?
I don't think I have to. I'm calling you pregnant. The this rest of the world.
All the time. I'm sick. Okay, anyways. So she's not pregnant is what you're saying. She doesn't have an excuse to go to bed. So she's got to go party. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, she's going to have a good time.
Got it.
Corey's roommate, Michael Beth, he was at the apartment that night. And he claimed that when they got there, Lauren was very intoxicated. And even though she was really drunk, Corey was trying to get her to go to a bar. And Corey told Michael that he wanted to get 3 more drinks at the bar, and then he would be feeling good. So it sounds like they went out for, like, kind of like a pregame. Like, you know, like, I do that now because I'm cheap.
Pre-gaming at midnight?
Oh, God, no, not for me. But it is pre-gaming if you drink before you go to the bar, so you're already drunk and you don't have to spend as much money getting drunk.
But at midnight?
Oh, no. All of this is a hard no for me. It is something I would have done in my younger days.
I don't know that I would have done it in my younger days. I would have been in bed already.
Oh, I would have absolutely done this in my younger... Not the Coke. Would not have done that. No, thank you. Hard pass.
But I like that quick correction. I wouldn't have done the Coke, but...
No. But the drinking at random hours of the night... I've been there. Yeah.
Been there, done that.
They do end up going to this bar. They walk. And if I didn't mention it, there is a map set up with timestamps.
Yes, super helpful. Yeah, I noticed it.
Because all of this happens, it sounds like, you know, she's she's walking to these townhouses and she walks to a bar and then she went. This is all within a couple blocks of each other. So it's not like they're walking miles and miles. I mean, it's what? The bar is about 2 blocks from her house, maybe 4, 5, 6 tops from the townhomes, the Rosenbaum's apartment.
Hold on. So they're not. Number one. Okay. Yeah. So one. Where is this damn bar?
Kilroy's? The bar is in the, yeah, Kilroy's.
Okay. I mean, it still feels like a long walk, but I guess maybe that's just me. Yeah. I can't walk anywhere right now. Everything feels like a long walk.
It's definitely not a short walk, but they're not like, they're not going all over Indiana. Indiana.
Indiana.
Indiana, yeah.
Indiana. It's Indiana Jones now, by the way.
Indiana Jones. I like that. It's got a ring to it.
It should have been what it was from the beginning. Anyways.
I forgot where I was. Oh, Indiana. They walked to the sports bar named Kilroy's. And this is about an hour after they left Jason's apartment. So within the hour, they leave Jason's, go to Corey's apartment, and then now they're going to this bar. While they were there, witnesses and surveillance footage, it shows that Lauren was obviously drunk. She's stumbling. She needs Corey's help walking. Apparently, they had like this sandy beach-like area. So she takes her shoes off. She loses her shoes. She leaves her cell phone at the bar. Regardless of her being very drunk, Corey allegedly bought her more drinks while they were there. And eventually, at 2:30 in the morning, they leave. Some sources said they were there for about half an hour, 45 minutes. So from the bar, Corey and Lauren make their way back to her apartment complex where they get into an altercation. They enter the complex and they took the elevator to Lauren's floor. She lived on the 5th floor. And when they got off the elevator, they ran into another group of students who lived at this complex. They apparently had an issue with Corey not helping Lauren into her apartment. I don't know what that means, but maybe, you know, he was just staying on the elevator and like letting her walk to her door. For whatever reason, they took issue with this, and one of the guys ended up punching Corey in the face.
Oh. Feel like, I guess I'm torn on that one a little bit, because if he got her into the building to the floor, that's really great. I personally would prefer him to get her to the door.
Right.
But I also feel like he's probably pretty drunk too.
Yeah. And I mean, I can see, to play like the devil's advocate here, I could see like if they go to college and this is a college dorm or apartment, then they could very well be worried like, okay, look, her apartment door was less than 100 yards away from them. So right. I could see them possibly being like, hey, I don't want anybody to misunderstand. Yes, we're friends. I don't want anybody to see us together and misunderstand. How about I stay here? I can see you walk to your apartment.
Yeah.
I could easily see something like that happening, but I don't know. Corey, spoiler alert, his lawyer at least, will later claim that after he got punched in the face, he has no recollection of anything after that.
I can kind of see that, though. He's already intoxicated. Mm-hmm. If there was any injury,
yeah,
concussion potentially, I can see that.
I can see that, but also it feels kind of
convenient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So after this, they both get back in the elevator and they leave the apartment complex. They start heading back towards Corey's apartment.
Both as in Corey and Lauren?
Yes, both of them.
Oh, why didn't she just continue on to her apartment?
You know, I had absolutely no idea. And, well, we won't find out. So, sorry. There's video evidence of Lauren slung across Corey's back during the walk back to his apartment. And I heard it described as like a fireman carry. And this was stated in court documents. Police claim to have seen this on surveillance video, but there is a lot of video that police have never released to the public. There's a little bit here and there, and we'll get into that. But this part, at least, I could not find anywhere, but it was mentioned multiple times that he had to carry her back. And it was kind of alluded, like, she was that inebriated that she couldn't walk. A couple sources also stated that this was in an alley specifically, that this happened, and her purse was, and her keys were later found in this alley.
Okay. I'm kind of surprised she was carrying a purse at all.
Yeah, I am too. I know the picture that police released, the last from her leaving her apartment, I don't really see a purse. I see a jacket, but I mean, it could easily be under the jacket. But sorry, I will put that picture. Okay. So when Michael returned home, who is Corey's roommate, he testified to thinking that somebody had broken into their apartment. And apparently something had happened in the past to lead him to think this. But he was kind of surprised to see that it was Lauren and Corey. And he said Corey was incredibly drunk. He vomited and then went to bed. And Lauren was even worse off than he had noticed her being earlier in the night.
Okay.
He said he tried to coax her into sleeping on their couch, but she insisted on going home. So not knowing what to do, he brought her back to Jason's apartment, where they had started their night.
Does he know where she lives? Sounds like he maybe didn't.
Yeah.
Because if he wasn't sure, I mean, if he knew where she lived and knew that she was in that same complex, basically, he could have taken her home.
Yeah, and it also kind of sounds like, because he took her back to Jason's apartment, it sounds like he was kind of like trying, you know, but what do you do? I've been that drunk girl. If I don't want to do something, I'm not doing it.
I have not been that drunk girl.
Oh.
I'm just that girl. If I don't want to do something, I'm not doing it.
Oh, I'm sober, definitely that girl.
Sober, drunk, it doesn't matter.
I'm that girl is worse when I'm drunk. So he brought her back to Jason's apartment, and Jason tried to arrange a ride home for Lauren, but he couldn't get a hold of anyone. He said he called two people. One of them was never named, at least publicly, and the other person was David Rohn. When he couldn't get a hold of anybody, he kind of just let her leave. Like, he couldn't keep her there, so he kind of just let her leave. He watched her begin her walk home at 4:30 in the morning. And Lauren was last seen by Jason Rosenbaum walking towards her apartment at the intersection of 11th and College Avenue. The next morning.
9th, 10th, 11th. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, you were looking at the map.
Uh-huh.
The next morning, Jesse says he sent Lauren a text message, and instead of getting a reply from Lauren, he got a reply from an employee at Kilroy's who told him that she had left her cell phone there. After not being able to contact her or find her, some sources said that he got in touch with her roommate and they went back and checked the apartment. She wasn't there. Jesse reports her missing. Police, they want to talk to three main people. Now, they have more persons of interest, but they definitely want to talk to Jesse Wolf, Jay Rosenbaum, and Corey Rossman. And all three of them lawyer up.
I mean, I'm not on the fence. It seems weird that they lawyer up so quickly, I guess. Mm-hmm. Especially if it's like, I guess maybe it depends on how the police approach it. If they started with questioning, like, hey, do you have any details on this? Blah, blah, blah. And they're like, they're cooperating. But then when they become like a person of interest, they lawyer up. I guess that's where I would be on the fence.
Yeah. And that's where, like, I'm kind of torn because to me, it's immediately suspicious when, like, you're like, hey, I didn't have anything to do with this. This is what I saw. But also, I'm not saying anything else. You can talk to my lawyer. Like, that's kind of sketchy. But we, like, it. I'm always reminded of, we haven't covered them yet, but the West Memphis Three, they got railroaded. Mm-hmm. Because, like, one of them spoke so freely because he, and I don't want to say freely, but one of them did speak pretty freely, but they, all three of those boys just,
yeah. But that's what that's where I'm torn is because people will lawyer up to protect themselves and make sure that they're not saying anything, first of all, incriminating towards themselves, and mm-hmm. so that they're protected, right? Like, I don't know the law, but a lawyer does.
Exactly. And I don't know. I could very easily say something that can be twisted and I don't know that.
Well, right. That's what I mean is like, I don't know what I'm going to say that's going to be twisted. I just know like my involvement. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I'm like, I guess I am torn. But part of it is because I just feel like I need clarity on when they lawyered up. Like, is this, they've already spoken to the police once about their involvement and whereabouts, and now they're persons of interest and now they're lawyering up? Or is it lawyer up as soon as police want to talk to you?
Well, I do have a little bit about that. I was able to find that Jesse, her boyfriend, he helped look for Lauren for 2 days, and then he left town. And a couple of sources, yeah, that is super sketchy, right? A couple of sources state that his parents made him leave. They made him come back home, which I can also kind of see that, you know, if my kid's off at college and something like this happens.
I feel like I would go to them, though. I don't feel like I would make them leave, because if they're searching for someone that they care about, I feel like I, as a parent, would want to go there and be with them versus, hey, come home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have no argument against that.
I guess, I don't know.
That. Maybe I can see their standpoint, but I feel more strongly towards yours.
And I'm not yet a parent. We're working on that. But that might change. I don't know. I feel like it should have been the opposite way around.
No, I agree with you.
I guess maybe they didn't have the means to be like, you need to come home or we need to go there. They had the means to bring him home, but not send someone there.
Maybe they couldn't miss work or something.
I don't know. I'm trying to justify it now.
When he did lawyer up, he, as I said, he refused to speak to police, but when he refused to take a polygraph for them, he did later take one. That was privately administered with his lawyer or I don't want to say with his lawyer, but, you know, they set it up privately and he took it and he did pass that one. Other sources stated that David Rohn, he helped look for her. He helped put up posters. And it kind of seemed like he was just kind of helpful through the whole thing.
And this is David Rohn?
David Rohn, yes.
This is the friend that lived in the same building or whatever it was that was party.
Yeah, he started the night with her and Jason tried to call him but was unable to get in touch with him that night to pick her up. So the Bloomington police, they watched over 300 hours of video surveillance in the area. And over time they searched. They searched lakes. They searched they combed through a landfill that was nearby, just looking for her anywhere they could, looking for her, looking for their body, looking for anything mm-hmm. that could possibly lead them to her. On June 14th, 2011, they released a picture of a Chevy Silverado or Colorado with letters on the door. The letters weren't legible. It was four doors, short bed pickup. It had some kind of equipment in the back. And this truck circled the block in the neighborhood Loring went missing from that night. And police asked this person to come forward. They did state this is a person of interest, not necessarily a suspect. They really just wanted this person to come forward because, if anything, like, did you see anything? They just wanted to talk to him.
Right.
And that person did come forward. and was cleared by the police a few days later. They do not believe that he was involved. So I did not involve his name here.
Okay.
Lauren's parents, they pretty quickly hired a private investigator named Mike Ciravolo. This guy feels legit, Bryce. Like, if I were to hire a PI, I feel like it would be him.
He'd be your number one pick, okay?
Oh, absolutely. He is former LAPD. He's now, well, I don't know about right now, but as of, I found an interview he did as of last year, so 2023. He's the senior investigator at Bo Deedle.
I like Bo Deedle more.
I like Bo Deedle too, but it's Bo Deedle. And super casual, just wanted to throw this in here. He led the task force for the Zodiac Killer in the 90s.
So he's like MVP status.
Yeah. I would say so. Yeah. Like, if they trusted him with that. As of that interview that I told you I found dated last year, he's still working on this case. He has not given up.
Is he still working on Zodiac at all? Genuine curiosity.
That's a good question. I don't know. Okay, do you want me to Google it?
No, you're fine. Let's focus on this case.
Okay. So, Mike Ciravolo, he believes one of three things happened to Lauren. Either Jesse hurt her in a jealous rage and may have done something. For what it's worth, all of their friends claim that Jason would have never done that. Like, not the person, Jason, not their relationship. Jesse? Sorry.
Jesse?
Whoa, okay. Yeah. Yes, their friends claim that Jesse would have never done that. He also believes that she could have succumbed to her heart condition while in Rosenbaum's apartment, and the men kind of panicked and hid it. But people speculate that there's absolutely no way they would have been able to hide and or even move her body without being seen because of the surveillance cameras that are all around that area.
They're also all inebriated to some extent.
Exactly, yeah. But even if they, like, I don't know, did something, slept it off and tried to do it the next day, they would have been seen moving, well, I mean, a body, a suitcase, anything like that. They would have been seen leaving the apartment with it.
I feel like, though, at that point, they would have been, by the time they kind of slept it off, I would hope, I guess, they would have been like, oh my God, we have to call police. We don't even know what happened. You know, like, there wouldn't be any reason to hide anything.
I mean, I would hope so, but we've seen it happen.
Well, people are dumb. And I assume they're also dumb. How old are they all at this time again?
Between 20 and 22, I believe.
Oh, so they haven't even fully developed their brains yet.
No.
Okay, so yeah, they're stupid. Got it? Okay.
And the third thing he believes could have happened was that she was just taken by an opportunist. Happened to be
in the area, watched her walking home.
Yeah. And was just able to, I mean, she didn't have a cell phone. She didn't even have shoes. Lauren's parents, over the years, begged her friends to come forward and speak multiple times, just insisting they had to know more. Charlene Spear, her mother, June 3rd, 2023, said, 12 years you've kept your secret. 12 years we've continued our search. I write today as a reminder that we will never stop. Her parents did attempt to sue Jesse, Corey, and Jason all separately, claiming negligence and violations of the Indiana Dram Shop Act. This act basically restricts giving alcohol to somebody intoxicated, and it holds people accountable if that person dies or gets hurt as a result. We see that in a lot of states.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, they lost the case. They lost all three cases. The first one, I believe, was against Jason, and then the other two afterwards. And they lost this case. The judge ruled this since they were unable to prove that Lauren was dead or injured as a result, and they said that the men did not have the right or ability to stop her from leaving that night.
I feel like they have a leg to stand on in the sense that she's gone. Like, she's a missing person. They should have something to say. Like,
I'm holding you accountable, but I also, I get legally, it's like, no, we can't even prove if that's how she was hurt, harmed, but also it played a role in her disappearance.
Mm-hmm. Especially if she's going to these places, like she's 20. She shouldn't even be drinking at all. Some sources did state that she had a fake ID, but like I said, like there's a lot of she did this, she did that, she said this, they said that in this case that I feel like just doesn't belong. Mm-hmm. Jesse's parents, they said a lot of stuff that I feel like was unnecessary. Okay. Stuff like, you know, if she wouldn't have been partying that night, she wouldn't have gone missing, all of that. Okay, that just feels unproductive.
First it also of all. Feels...
And secondly, you should be able to go out with your friends and not, and go home at the end of the night.
Yeah, no matter what time of night. Victim blamey, you know, like she's the victim, but she shouldn't have done this. She blah blah blah.
Yes, incredibly victim blamey.
So I don't enjoy that, but
oh no, I hated taking it out of the story, but I also hated leaving it in. I just hate that I had to read it. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, I'm just. I mean, like you said, she should be able to go out with her friends regardless of if she is drinking underage or not, which that's a different issue. That's a different topic. Regardless, mm-hmm. she should be able to get home safe.
Right. Regardless of everything else, just you should be able to go out and go home.
It also makes me wonder if they know more than what mm-hmm. they're letting on to.
And there were a lot of claims coming from them too, that you know, she was a party girl. She was doing hard drugs. They were doing these drugs at the party.
So?
Again, so people have done very hard drugs around me that I have not done. Mm-hmm. Okay? Like, okay, very hard makes it sound a little methy. I've never seen someone do meth. That I know of. Okay, yeah, good. Good point there. But, like, I've been around people doing drugs, and I was very easily like, that's not for me. You go run along now.
Right.
It's very possible. And I don't know, even the drinking, like it's the heart problem where I'm like, I feel like that could have done something, but still, where is she?
I feel like the heart problem would probably persuade her not to do drugs, right? Like mm-hmm. she knew about it. She knew.
Yeah.
It was a risk, and I just feel like, I don't know, drugs make me feel like your heart's going to go out. Like, I don't know, I haven't done drugs. Let me clarify, Dad, I haven't done drugs. But in my mind, like, I've heard people say, like, their heart starts racing.
Yes.
Don't you think she wouldn't want that, I guess?
And, yeah, obviously she's going to know, like, it's more dangerous for her with that issue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a medical professional. I imagine the alcohol could play a role in that as well. But like I said, if it did, where is she? That doesn't explain how she just dropped off the face of the earth.
Right. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's more, I don't know. From my standpoint, it feels like it was most likely the opportunistic person.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was not in a position to be out that late at night and fully comprehend like the dangers there. Even though she might have been really close to her apartment, people are really kind of fudged up.
Yeah. And she was like, I know people are probably more vulnerable when they're drunk, especially if they were as drunk as people say she was.
Mm-hmm.
But also, this girl was tiny.
Which one drink would make probably.
It. Yeah. And it would make it even easier for an opportunist to just, I don't know. I hate thinking about it all, but.
I mean, I don't enjoy the story, but I do like that the word is being spread.
Yes. And I really do hope, like, oh my gosh, we're going on 13 years now. I mm-hmm. really just hope somebody if they do know something, I hope they come forward.
Yeah. But people are rude and they just keep secrets, you know?
And secrets don't make friends.
Yeah. Well, do you want to hear another story?
Yes, please.
Okay. This one is not a disappearance, guys. You're welcome. It's also not a true crime. You're welcome.
Also welcome.
Yes. So, do we all remember this book here? Mythopedia, an encyclopedia of mythical beasts and their magical tales that I talked about a few weeks ago?
I don't think you've ever talked about that multiple times, no.
Yeah, this is the one that we're still not sure should have been in the children's section. Uh-huh. We have finished this book.
Oh, okay.
There are some stories we'll read to the babies.
Uh-huh.
But there are some that probably not. We'll skip through those until they're old enough to read on their own, and then they can read that. Like, I have no issue reading a story about Pegasus to our children, okay? But
yeah.
But I did take inspiration for this story from this book, so.
Okay, I'm here. I'm listening. I'm ready. I got my Funyuns.
Listen, guys. This is not what was in the book. I mean, there's one cryptid from this book that I put in here, but it just kind of inspired the rest of the story. So we're going to be covering some Norse mythology today. And so I'm going to apologize in advance. I am going to try my damnedest to say these words correctly, but I heard different pronunciations. I trusted Google. I have what I can. Don't judge me. I'm not an expert in Norse mythology. I am just enjoying reading all this stuff and sharing it with you guys. Okay. Okay.
Okay.
So wish me luck on that one. Also, as a side note, there's so much about this story that we're going to talk about. So specifically, we're going to talk about Yggdrasil. And like I said, there's so much about this Yggdrasil. It's a tree, and we can branch this into different stories of its own. So I will probably...
I'm really excited. I just realized what this is. Can I say it?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard of it. This, but I don't you know much about it. You can say it. Well, I'm going to ask, is this like the Norse tree of life?
Yes, it is.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Okay. So, okay. I'm going to just tell you, I'm going to revisit this because this episode, I am focused on the creatures that live on Yggdrasil, but not the actual realms within.
Okay. Gotcha.
Okay. So, Yggdrasil, not a being, it is a sacred tree in Norse mythology. Around Yggdrasil exists all else. So this includes the Norse belief of the nine worlds existing around the tree, and many reference this as the ancient Norse view of the cosmos. One of the widely accepted meaning of Yggdrasil is Odin's horse. Ygg is one of many names that Odin takes, Drasil meaning horse. So Odin, he was actually one of the most important gods in Norse mythology. He was said to travel across Yggdrasil on his horse Fleipnir. Now, this is often accepted as, Drasil is often accepted as gallows too. And that's because of the poem Havamal. It describes how Odin would sacrifice himself, and this was done by hanging from Yggdrasil, thus making the tree Odin's gallows as well. So you have both definitions that are argued, obviously.
But that's interesting that would make it both a tree of life and a tree of death.
Mm-hmm. So the most often you'll see it referenced as Odin's horse, though. And that's the most widely accepted meaning that I can find. There are other meanings behind it that you can find as well as from different scholars, things of that nature. That's just the most widely accepted. Now, some debate the name of the tree. If the name of the tree is Yggdrasil or the full name is Oscar Yggdrasil, Oscar meaning ash tree. Oscar Yggdrasil would mean the world tree upon which the horse of the highest god is bound. Does that make sense?
Say that one more time.
So Oscar Yggdrasil would mean the world tree upon which, quote, the horse of the highest god is bound.
Bound, like, tied to it, kind of?
Yes.
Okay, I'm with you.
So, Yggdrasil It is an ash tree that in the Norse cosmology is central to the cosmos, and it is very holy. It's believed that the gods go to Yggdrasil daily. They assemble at their traditional tribal council. Like, this tree is everything for this Norse mythology. Now, the tree is supported by three roots that extend to other locations. One root extends to Urobrunner in the heavens. So the root obviously extends downward, but this extends to the Well of Fate. Another is the Spring of Hvergelmir, which is also known as the Bubbling Boiling Springs, which contains snakes and the dragon. Hold on, I have this written down. Nithogr. And this one is said to be located beneath the root in Niflheim. The final root extends into a well of Mimsbrunner. And I understood this as like a well of knowledge. And I don't want to dive too far, but it is said that Odin sacrificed one of his eyes to the well in exchange for a drink and for knowledge. So, So that's what you have at the roots. You also have the branches of Yggdrasil, and those are believed to extend into the heavens and is the home to the nine worlds of the Norse mythology. So you have Asgard, home of the gods, Alfheim, home of the elves, Novellir, home of the dwarves, Midgard, home of the humans, that's us guys, Jotunheim, land of the giants, Vanaheim, home of a group of gods known as the Vanir, Niflheim, world of hold on, let me double check what that one is.
On the picture it says Niflheim is world of the dead. I'm looking at the picture and going along with you.
Hold on, it probably is, but I probably deleted it on accident. Hold on.
Well, wait, it says there's two realms of the dead.
Yes, I bet you anything I was trying to put hell, goddess hell.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know how I did that one. that's fine. Back to where I was. And then you have Muspelheim, world of fire, and Helheim, the underworld of the dead. So nine realms.
So don't want to go to those last couple.
Nope. Now, each of these worlds or realms hold an importance of their own in Norse mythology. And this is what I mean when I say I'm going to revisit this tree another time. I want to share the importance of each realm, each world, but my focus today, it's not about the worlds or the realms or the roots. So I will give more details on those. They're very fascinating, and I've already been doing reading on them. But today, we are focusing on the creatures that surround the tree. Now, at the top of the tree is Vjorfolnir. In Old Norse, this translates to storm pale, wind bleached, or wind witherer. Now, Vjorfolnir is a hawk that is sitting between the eyes of an unnamed eagle.
Oh.
Though some sources say the eagle is named, and it's named Hvergelmir, which is one of the springs, the bubbling, boiling spring. So it's kind of contested that that's their name. So I opt to say they're an unnamed eagle.
So is it contested like it can be either or? Like either this eagle or this spring is named this? Or they're both?
No. It's contested if the eagle's name is that.
Okay.
So I'm sticking with unnamed eagle, right? So now this hawk-eagle combo, they sit atop the world tree Yggdrasil. The hawk and eagle have both been attested in the Poetic Edda, which is a 13th century collection of Old Norse poems, which actually all of what we're going to talk about are in the Poetic Edda, or they're attested in the Prose Edda. And Prose Edda is an Old Norse textbook that was written in Iceland during the early 13th century.
Oh, okay. Is that all?
Yeah. In the Poetic Edda poem, the Henry Adams Bellow translation states, Radatosker is the squirrel who there shall run on the ash tree Yggdrasil from above the world of the eagle he bears and tells them to Nithogr beneath. So this is where you're getting that reference of these. So the unnamed eagle, a lot of people claim they have vast knowledge, and it's not clear what the purpose of the hawk on the brow is, whether they go off to obtain knowledge for the eagle, but they're typically seen as a pair. And some speculate, like I said, the hawk flies off to gather that knowledge and then just gives it back to the eagle.
Okay.
Now, that's all I could find on this unnamed eagle, at least specific to this eagle.
I'm sorry. I like the picture how it's just the little, it looks like a little baby bird just chilling on the head of a very large bird.
It does. It really does.
It's very sweet.
And these are all from a 17th, or not all, all of the ones that look like this are from a 17th century Icelandic manuscript. For images. Okay. And you'll recognize which images I'm referencing. So
these are the cream of the crop, basically. These are the best images.
Yes, yeah. At the base of the tree, so this isn't the roots, this is before the roots, there are four stags. The stags' names and their potential meaning are Dane, the dead one, Davalin, the unconscious one, Dunair, thundering in the ear, and Durapro, thriving slumber. I didn't Google how to say their names, guys. I'm sorry. These guys don't have a lot of information on them. So these stags, they chomp at the branches of the tree and, you know, the leaves of the tree. It's said that the morning dew gathers at the horns of these stags, and then the morning dew forms the rivers of the world.
Well, that's like, that's really poetic, and I love mm-hmm. it.
Some interpretations of the stags connect them to either the four elements, fire, water, air, earth, the four seasons, the phases of the moon, or some even connect them to the different types of winds. So there's a lot of debate still regarding the stags and their symbolic value to Norse mythology. And so there's really not a lot of information in general about these stags. There's theories that they actually started as one and separated through whatever process. Couldn't get a lot of clarity on that one, but there's a lot of debate still on what their symbology is. Now, at the roots of the tree, now specifically at one of the, well, I guess it's all over the roots, is the dragon Nithogr. The Norse meaning for this is curse striker, or he who strikes with malice.
Oh.
Nithogr sits at the roots and is believed to gnaw on the corpses of the inhabitants of Nastrond. And it's said that the inhabitants of this are guilty of murder, adultery, oath-breaking, perjurers. They're basically like the worst of the worst, right?
Okay.
As well as he sits at the roots and gnaws at the roots of Yggdrasil. Some sources claim that he gnaws at the roots in an attempt to damage and topple the tree. Now, Nithogr is considered to be one of the many lindworms or serpents at the base of the tree. He just happens to be the most well-known one. Like, he basically, how I interpreted it is he is the leader, the rest are his little minions, and they all chew at the roots of this tree.
Okay.
So it's believed that he was born and raised at the roots of Yggdrasil, and he's never left. Like, he's essentially trapped there.
No wonder he's gnawing at the roots.
Well, Nithogr is also believed to rule over part of the underworld, specifically the part that allows him to gnaw murderers and such. And I mentioned this is the part known as Nastrong, which is also known as the Shore of Corpses.
Oh.
So, rules over that piece. And Nithogr reportedly aligns himself with the Jotun. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Jotun, I don't know how it's said in Norse. This is one of those worlds we'll get into, and I'll learn how to say it later on. But, for Norse mythology, these are the giants who stand against the Asgardian gods.
Okay.
And it's believed that when Ragnarok arrives, Nithogr will fly out of the roots to the tree of the tree and aid the Jotun in their battle against the gods. And this reference specifically comes from the Old Norse poem, the Völuspá, aka also known as Insight of the Seeress.
So the dragon and the giants are they're just down to destroy.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Now, the unnamed eagle in Nithogr, they don't get along. They are not pals. They are not buds. Not a problem, right? Because they're on opposite ends of the tree.
Sounds like it, but I bet there's a problem, isn't it?
There's a problem. Between the eagle and Nithogr is Ratatoskr. This is the cryptid that was in the book that inspired this story. Cody and I have affectionately taken to calling him Oscar. He's my favorite, okay? Ratatoskr is a red squirrel that runs up and down Yggdrasil. They bring the word of the eagle from the top of the tree all the way down to Nithogger at the roots, and vice versa. Don't be deceived by this little squirrel, though. They are a shit-talking little heifer. So they are typically described as a troublemaker. Sources state that Ratatoskr delivers malicious messages between the eagle at the top and Nithogger at the roots of Yggdrasil, oftentimes twisting their words. Some sources state he just makes up his own bullshit to anger the eagle and Nithogger and just keeps the drama going.
So wait a minute. I'm dying. Okay, so hold on. So this little squirrel, this is what's happening in my head. Okay, this eagle is like, hey, go tell that dragon that I'm tired of fighting and I would like to invite him and his mother over for a grand feast in my dining room. And then the squirrel goes down to the dragon and he's like, hey, so this eagle told me to come tell you that your mama's so fat she won't even fit through the kitchen door.
Uh-huh.
Oh, he's a mess.
Goes up the tree and tells the eagle something. He said, screw you, screw your invite, you ain't shit, you're not meeting my mama.
Oh, this squirrel. Oh, he's busy.
He's busy. I'm not arguing with that, okay?
He's the oldest. He's been here the longest, and he's just bored.
I don't know about that, because there are theories on why the squirrel does this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's unclear, right? It's not, nothing's confirmed as to why Ratatoskr does this.
Has anybody ever asked him?
I don't know that they've ever gotten a straight answer from him.
That seems right.
That fits, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, some sources claim it's just to keep the drama going, basically. They say that he enjoys fueling this spiteful relationship between the two creatures, and so he just kind of keeps twisting words and making some BS up, and he's living his best life, okay?
Oh my gosh, okay.
Others state that Ratatoskr is actually trying to destroy Yggdrasil. So by angry, yes.
Bro, doesn't he live there?
Yeah, but...
You're not thinking this through.
Yeah, but if the tree falls, that frees, like, the dragon and allows for... basically a war between the gods and the giants. Like, there's no more order, essentially.
So this squirrel is just chaos incarnate.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
He's still my favorite. I don't even care. Okay. Let me just tell you, when Cody was reading this, he mentioned the delivering messages part in this book. And the first thing I said is, he's probably adding some little bullshit onto those messages, too. Followed by Cody's next sentences saying something about, he's twisting the words. I told you, Cody. So what he's doing.
I'm going to have to start calling Annie Ratatoskr.
Just call her Oscar. We just affectionately call him Oscar. So
Oscar it is.
Yep, there you go. Now, basically how they're achieving destroying this tree, Yggdrasil. By angering the eagle at the eagle will tear at the branches to drop them on Nithogger in an attempt to injure or kill the dragon below. Okay. And then by angering Nithogger at the bottom, at the roots, this causes Nithogger to aggressively gnaw and tear at the roots of the tree in hopes that the tree will fall over, crushing and killing or injuring the eagle. So
they're just constantly going at each other by way of tree.
Uh-huh. Because one can't get to the bottom and the other can't get to the top. Only Ratatoskr can do that.
This damn squirrel.
He's just over there whispering in a dragon's ear like, hey, this eagle said that your mama is so fat. He's just pissed. He's like, how dare you speak of my mother like that? And then he runs up to the eagle and he goes, this dragon says that your feathers look like crap every day. You know?
He's and you have to have a tiny hawk do all your bidding.
It's not you with the knowledge, it's the hawk. You know?
Ooh. I bet that pissed him off.
I bet he grabbed the biggest branch he could, you know?
Mm-hmm.
From the prose Edda, it states, quote, An eagle sits at the top of the ash, and it has knowledge of many things. Between its eyes sits the hawk, called Vedrfolnir. The squirrel, called Ratatoskr, runs up and down the ash. He tells slanderous gossip, provoking the eagle and Nithogger.
This squirrel would absolutely be on 2000s MTV.
This squirrel belongs in Mean Girls. Mean Squirrels.
Mean Squirrels.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
This belongs on Mean Squirrels. We should have a whole series of that one.
Oscar is the Regina George of Mean Squirrels.
Uh-huh. He is. And I can't argue. He's fabulous. I don't care what anyone says.
Oh, he's very handsome. Look at the tufts on those ears.
Listen, you haven't even seen the imagery that they have given me on this one. Look at this handsome boy.
Oh, he is fabulous.
He is fabulous. And I'm sorry, guys, I can't actually show you guys listening the squirrel in this book. But he is fabulous. And I don't know if you noticed, there is the eagle at the top and the dragon down at the bottom.
I did see that. I didn't see the dragon, but I do now.
I think it's because my hands were covering him.
Oh, okay. So there. Up to his face.
So, listen. Love it. I love this little shit-talking heifer. So this, basically all of this tension causing the world tree or balance never to be at peace because of Ratatoskr. He's always stirring up some sort of trouble, according to some sources, right? So according to those sources, the world's never at peace because of this. Now, it's believed that when Nithogger is offended or angry enough, that he will shake the foundation of Yggdrasil enough to tremble all nine worlds of the tree. He would then set himself free to complete his vow to kill the eagle atop Yggdrasil. And this liberation of Nithogger would represent the start of Ragnarok.
Okay.
And for those of you that don't know, Ragnarok is like basically destroying the world, right? It's destroying everything. World. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly enough, Jacob Grimm from the Brothers Grimm, he would look for a deeper meaning to Ratatoskr's role in Norse mythology. This is like the last thing. I just thought this was really interesting that sources are citing him as looking deeper. And he reportedly came to the conclusion that Ratatoskr actually helped to maintain balance for Yggdrasil. So it may not seem like it, may seem like he's trying to destroy things, but for Jacob Grimm, Ratatoskr may have caused trouble, tension, and even the destruction of the tree. All of those things would actually help to keep this tree, their trunk, straight. And this would allow for new growth to sprout as well on the tree.
Wait a minute. So, that makes a lot of sense, though.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know who's correct. I did think I liked the Grimm version, the Jacob Grimm version, because that means that Ratatoskr can continue just being a shit-talking heifer. And I can still love him without any guilt.
He's a shit-talking heifer for the greater good.
Exactly. But we still love him. And those are the...
I kind of love him as just a chaos bringer for no reason.
He really is. He's a chaos bringer for... He's just... I don't know. Oscar, you tell us. What do you think? Like, tell us how you feel, what your role is. If a giant red squirrel shows up and starts telling you what their role is... Please tell me all about it, guys.
We do have red squirrels here. Did I tell you that?
No.
They're freaking huge.
Yell Oscar out the door and see if anyone responds.
Done. Okay. I'll let you know.
You can do that tomorrow because I know it's kind of late. Your neighbors might not appreciate you doing it right now.
Probably not.
But that is the story of the creatures that live along Yggdrasil. There might be some more that you find. There was one source I found about a chicken or a rooster that lived atop Yggdrasil. But then other sources said it was a hawk. I was really confused. I went with the hawk story because that's what most sources said.
Okay.
But that's my story. That's Yggdrasil. I know we both had short stories today.
I don't know. I really, really enjoyed your story though.
Yeah, and like I said, I'll revisit it. I have every intention of coming back and doing, I'll probably do like groups of three or four worlds at a time, something like that, just depending on how much information there is behind them. But I will revisit this and have more details on each of the worlds and their importance in Norse mythology.
This is really cool. I really enjoyed it.
So Look, I enjoyed it. And I'm going to tell you guys, this is one I've mentioned a couple of times while we've recorded, but I've been struggling because I was putting all of the world details in here and I was at like 15 pages or something. And oh, I was like, this is not going to work for a paranormal story. This is so long. So I had to kind of figure out how I was going to divide it and make it logical.
Okay.
So that's where my brain went. As I'll start with the cryptids because Ratatoskr over here inspired the story.
And we love a cryptid. Like, y'all know that.
We're cryptid girls through and through. It doesn't matter.
No.
But yeah, that's what I've got for you today.
I really liked your story.
I'm glad because I really like the mythology stories.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll probably start doing more and more of them. But I don't know for sure. I don't know. No, I know for sure I'll be doing more mythology. Now that I'm figuring out how to work it in more paranormal. Yeah.
Yeah. I really like, I really enjoy Norse mythology. I enjoy all mythology, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But I really enjoy Norse mythology because my grandma's dad, was from Norway. So I don't know. I wouldn't really consider myself Norwegian by any means, but I feel a little, I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, but I mean, it's still fun to hear about.
Yeah.
Look, I've got books over on that bookshelf behind me that you guys can't see. I think I've got African mythology, Chinese, and I don't remember the third one, but I know I have a third one. I think it might be Norse mythology. I don't think it is, though.
I feel like you bought James a Korean mythology book, didn't you?
Yeah, his isn't as fancy as mine, though. Okay, and I double-checked what it is. I've got Aztec, and it's not Chinese. It's Japanese mythology and then African mythology. But like
when you said Aztec, I immediately went, ooh, because, oh my God, I loved learning about like Aztec culture when I was in school. I found that ridiculously interesting.
Yeah. So those are the ones I have. I'm going to see if I can find more of these, but I'm sure I can. Cause I remember there was a Norse mythology of this one, but they're all like this. Mine are all nice and hardcover, they're tiny words, so I know it's real official. Whoa. I just opened the book, like I was flashing Amanda with the words.
I was not expecting those words to be that small.
They're tiny.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really, now that I'm figuring out how to get mythology in here, it's coming in, guys. Coming in hot with some mythology. Thank you all for listening to Hell on Heels Podcast. To see pictures from this episode, you can follow us on Instagram, Hell on Heels Podcast, X Hell on Heels Pod, or Facebook, Hell on Heels Podcast. You can find us on Linktree by typing in Hell on Heels Podcast. If you want to support us, please like, review, rate, share, and subscribe on your preferred listening platforms. If you want to take your support one step further so we can create additional content for you, you can donate through Patreon, where we're working to release our specials for our patrons. If you have your own true crime or paranormal story suggestions or just words of encouragement, please email us at hellonheelspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening. Be sure to tell your friends to listen with you as well. Bye.
Bye.